I call her my boss. She's been with me for nearly 7 years now. She knows everything about my life, everything about our business. Eileen's always like, can we hire someone new? And then she'll show me her DMs and it would be flooded with, can I come work for your company? Can I come work for your company? Because that's where we've been able to build that culture. Even in the beginning when finances were tight, I remember reading a book, Leaders Eat Last. If you've read that book or heard of that book before, it's a great ethos and philosophy, but also there's legacy, which is about the All Blacks, which you mentioned before we started. Inside of the All Blacks organization, what would happen is that the captain, Richie McCaw, Dan Carter, and Tana Umanga, three of the greatest All Blacks of all time. I used to play rugby in my younger days, so this was the best book for me to read coming into business. The captains would sweep the sheds.
But I am the world's biggest super fan.
You're like a super fan.
Welcome to the Business Superfans Podcast. We will discuss how establishing business superfans from customers, employees, and business partners can elevate your success exponentially. Learn why these advocates are a key factor to achieving excellence in the world of commerce. We discuss the invaluable insights of business owners who have successfully implemented the strategies in the book to build their own team of devoted superfans. Gain insightful knowledge from the experts who create applications that help you create passionate superfans. This is the Business Superfans Podcast. With your host, Freddie D.
Freddie!
Hey, Freddie D here. What does it take to build a business that not only grows, but creates raving fans at every level, customers, teams, and communities alike? In this episode, we chat with James Wellington, who has lived that journey firsthand. After losing his mom at a young age, he struggled to find purpose. James threw himself into semi-professional rugby before turning his competitive drive toward entrepreneurship, and quickly realized that the true freedom isn't just about making money. It's about building businesses that align purpose with profit and inspire loyalty through impact. From founding Australia's largest digital marketing school to scaling companies beyond seven figures and now helping entrepreneurs and small to mid-sized businesses accommodate their financial needs to a model of finance, James has mastered the art of turning transactions into transformation. If you're ready to build a brand people believe in and grow profits while you're at it, you're going to love this conversation. Hello, James from Amala Agency, all the way from Gold Coast, Australia. Welcome to the Business Superfans Podcast. We're excited to have you, James.
Thanks so much for having me, Frederick. It's an honor to be here.
It's an honor for you to be on the show. Tell us a little bit about the backstory of what is Amala Agency all about? And more importantly, how did you come up with Amala Agency?
Terrific. I'll start with the word because I think that's the thing that most people really resonate when they understand the words. In 2006, I lost my mother, Amanda Lani, due to breast cancer. The word Amala actually comes from an acronym of her name, Amanda Lani, A-M-A-L-A. For those listening on podcasts, you would not be able to tell, but I am half Italian. The word Amala is actually an Italian term, means to love and to love her. In Arabic Hindu, it means beacon of hope, beacon of light, wisdom, and hope. The name itself, Amala, is very much about being a beacon of light, wisdom, and hope in an industry for small to medium-sized businesses all the way through to large corporates. The design of the business was to create a movement for the SME sector to understand that there are solutions out there that can teach their business to grow from zero to six, seven, even eight figures and beyond, which we've been able to achieve, and we want to pass that wisdom back on to many others. It's very sentimental. It's a large organization. We have multiple solutions. So we're not just a one-stop shop. We definitely have a lot of different focuses for businesses and very much about helping the small to medium-sized sector.
What kind of services do you guys offer?
So we started out in digital marketing. I know your background comes from SaaS. We have moved into SaaS now alongside finance and fintech. We actually built Australia's largest digital marketing school with over 12,000 students across Australia and New Zealand. From there, we realized there was a lot of other things that businesses needed. Any good marketer knows that leads are only as good as the salespeople selling them. If my business partner listens to this, he'll probably beg to differ. We also created a sales training agency and work alongside people like Dr. Joe Vitale, Brian Tracy, Philip Kotler. We do marketing, sales. And now we've actually moved into finance. We realized that if you combine marketing, sales, and finance, fundamental to many small to medium-sized businesses, we want to give them a running start. We've brought in-house solutions offered as a service. And our motto is actually, we make money alongside you. So using finance, we get paid from the lender, which allows us to make money alongside our clients by accelerating their growth. So yeah, we do quite a lot, but those are the three main things.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Interesting. So let's go down the road first of the marketing aspect that you're doing, and how do you help SMBs? What are the services that you're providing in that space? So we'll talk about all three of them.
Perfect. So what we do in the marketing sector is inside of our finance portal, we've created a merchant portal, and we've actually given all of our assets for free as part of a business solution for small to medium-sized businesses to use. Some of my friends, colleagues, and business partners are very high up in the marketing space. We've done marketing for F45 US, Nordic Track, Smirnoff. I've asked some of those guys to contribute to what we call the community. They've brought together some of the best marketing resources to teach people the digital component. We help people is that we bring them in to utilize our finance, give them the resources to start and grow their business. If they need additional services, we have offers for marketing agency and sales. We use a system called Go High Level. It's a simple SaaS software. We chose because of the open API and open coding, which allowed us to connect to other assets and widgets. And we just give a full business solution in terms of marketing. I think a lot of people are focusing on every platform versus, you know, hey, get good at one, get some lead flow coming in, and then watch your business grow from there. We give a lot of our resources away for free in order to help the business grow.
Excellent. Yeah, I use the same platform for managing my podcast stuff. So I'm quite familiar with the platform. Actually, back in 1986, dating myself clearly, I wrote my own CRM system using a relational database on a Mac. I had a backpack for my Mac, and I would take it to companies that I was selling some manufacturing software to, and we would use Excel to create an ROI of their investment. I was involving them in creating the ROI, so they had ownership in it. It wasn't me. It was them. The point I'm bringing up is that it's important to leverage technology, especially in today's marketplace, to grow your platform. A product like Go High Level is an excellent platform that incorporates a multitude of capabilities within one platform. What I did back in the day was just a very rudimentary CRM system with name, number, address, and some notes.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I think with the way technology is moving at the moment, once upon a time, you assume SaaS, coding, IT comes as all these things that are out of the reach of the everyday human. I know we mentioned before we started that you've been to Australia a few times. I'm a country kid, so I will definitely say my limitations are coding technology, but I do own a large fintech company. I'm the typical CEO visionary, and I have a team that implements. I'm like, is it possible? You know, I remember watching a video with Elon Musk once, and he always challenges his team to do things. And if they can't do it, he'll try to figure it himself and go and hire someone else till they say, yes, they can do it. That's pretty similar to myself. My team's always like, you've got these crazy visions, but through Go High Level, a lot of the things I'm saying possible, which I love for anyone starting out, it's so much more than just a CRM. With all the different plugins now, it allows people to have a full business solution without having to be an IT genius or a coder, like you mentioned.
Right. Well, that's what I needed to do at the time because nothing existed. Then I ended up using a system called HAT. Wow, I still remember it. Contacts, Activity, and Times for automation. Back then, there was no email that existed. So I would create template documents and use them as letters. When I would go out and sell to somebody, I would send a follow-up. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to meet with me. But it'd be one letter, you know, these six people, and poof, it'd be personalized. And then I would actually mail it through the postal service, a letter. And that was a game changer because nobody was doing that.
Yeah, it's true. I think, as I mentioned, we worked directly with Brian Tracy. One thing Brian said to me, and it's so simple, I've been in sales for nearly 8 years now, and it was one of the first interactions we had. He always gives us little gems of advice. And my whole team was writing all of this down. It's such a simple philosophy. He said 80% of the money is made in the follow-up. It's as simple as asking someone, hey, how have you experienced the service? Have you enjoyed it? Would you refer it to anybody else? And it's like, fundamentally, you know to do that, but in this digital day and age, we're so focused on new lead generation, and therefore it feels like we actually forget to, you know, like you mentioned, become that super fan, actually have that strategy to get your clients indoctrinated to then bring more people in. Because I've found every single time we've brought a referral in, we've literally had so much more money come in. The sales have been a million times easier. And the social proof's already there because you've delivered the service. A lot of people are struggling in this day and age. And like you mentioned, just that little simple follow-up. I wonder how many people, if they just spent some time nurturing their list or actually sending a message or saying, thank you for your service. Did you enjoy your service? I wonder how much more business people could have. So I 100% agree with that. I think it's such an important little thing to just do those little tweaks and follow-ups. And no one seems to do it. Even to this day, a lot of people struggle with it.
Because it's the mindset's transactional, but I have met Brian Tracy. Actually, if you go on my website, you'll see a picture of me and him. He was in a meeting and we ended up getting a little room in a restaurant, and it was a great session with him. Super nice guy. I got some great tips out of him. But going back to the engagement, one of the things that I talk about in my book, as well as when I'm coaching some people, is the sale really isn't what people think the sale is. In my mind, the sale begins at the onboarding. The paperwork is the deal. The real sale is the whole onboarding process, the whole customer experience. Is the technology they're using going to work for them? Because that sets the precedent. If you've got the right expectations, you set up the right plans for people, especially for the workforce, because they've got a target on their backs, a guy that spent the money in the technology says, okay, how come you're not making any money with this stuff yet? So if you set up the proper expectations that a lot of people don't do, they just think, well, I got the deal and that's it. That in turn sets a whole dynamics that now they become your super fans because Freddie took the light off the back of our head. We need to run two systems concurrently, run the old system until you're bringing in the new technology, phase one out, then this one goes full time. That whole onboarding and bringing that customer on sets the tonality for the relationship.
Agreed, agreed. And I think, as we mentioned, your background being SaaS and our current reality in SaaS, I think the most important metric with any SaaS business should be every business's churn rate. I think a lot of people are always looking at the ROAS. So this comes from a digital marketer that runs a digital marketing school. That's great for growth and scalability. But if you've got a business that's relying upon payment plans, subscriptions, I guess, wanting to become a super fan, you should be focused on the churn rate and the attrition rate of actually maintaining the customer relationships. But also the metric that we very much focus on from a marketing standpoint is lifetime value. Like, right. How many times has the customer said yes to something else? And I think that's where a lot of businesses struggle is they look at cost per acquisition, average order value, and ROI, or ROAS we call it, return on ad spend. Those three metrics, they're all front-end metrics, but we know from scaling our business from zero to over $700,000 per month, we've done about $50 million in the space to date in the online high-ticket education space. The metrics that really mattered was the back-end lifetime value. We had customers coming in from the front, a $97 low-ticket course, and have spent over $100,000 with us because the experience was world-class. And I think that's where the superfan really comes in, that strategy of how can you have people buy into a mission and a vision that they don't just want to be transactional, but more transformational. How can your business transform them from day one to day 670, 2 years down the track? And I think a lot of people lose sight of that.
Totally, because when I was selling into the manufacturing space, and I had what's called computer-aided manufacturing software in the CAD/CAM market space, and I go into a tool and die shop, I didn't get into the features and functions of the software, because reality is I tell the owner, says, okay, James, all the other products do the job. Some will turn right, some will turn left, some are blue, some are green. Where do you see yourself 2, 3, 5 years from now? What's the biggest bottleneck in your business that's costing you and holding back? And why are you looking at this technology? The conversation switched. My style of selling was business strategy. This is just a tool. But how can I help you get to where you want to go? No pain points where we're scrapping metal. How much did that metal cost you? $20,000. How many times you scrap that metal per year when the milling machine doesn't cut it correctly because of some algorithm issues? 4 times a year. Okay, so that's $80,000. If I could save you 2 of those, you're in a plus column investing in my technology, and then we would work out the whole plan, laying out the whole implementation process, running concurrently, making the decision, training, setting up systems, processes, and procedures. We work the sale backwards. I said, well, James, based upon your timeline that you just outlined, you need to issue me that PO in the next hour and you'd be toast. What happened is that company we talked about went from a 40-man shop to 120 people. They bought the building next door, built a breezeway between those two, and bought the building on the other side. It completely scaled. They were my super fan to where they would call other owners and say, you know, you're doing overflow from us. You need to contact Freddie D here and get the same technology. And just like you said earlier, the guys would call up and say, hey, Jack says I need to get this. What's it going to cost me? How fast can you get it in here? And that was it.
Yeah. The fundamentals of business always remain the same, but the way in which people perceive business is what's changing. And a lot of people are in that day and age where it's like, I love social media for the tool that it is for business, but it's just that, a tool. The addiction towards vanity metrics, like even when I say 12,000 customers, I say that as a metric, but what I'm really proud of is the thousands of people that started an agency, the thousands of people that have replaced their full-time income, the hundreds of people that have done over multiple six figures now. When I really look for it, I look at the people that genuinely benefited from it. I think sometimes in my entrepreneurial journey starting out, I was very much into that, you know, sales. Since doing that, I know we've mentioned marketing so far. We do have sales and finance. When we created our sales program, I was focused on a connection to the why and to the who that it actually becomes. So the future of that, whereas a lot of the past experiences in sales, and again, I won't name names and this isn't a stab at anyone in the industry, but a lot of sales trainers are teaching these days the what and the how. They take people into a, how would you feel if you didn't make this experience? It's like a negative fear-based selling model versus, you know, why does something like this benefit you? Who do you think this could help? Or how could this be in the future? The how question could be used from a negative or a positive. We teach our team to really create that emotional connection. Because anybody can get all the flashy bells and whistles. We live in a day and age, your website looks amazing, but what's the saying? It's not too crude, but you can't polish a turd is what we say here in Australia. You know, and it's like,
a turd's a turd.
I think that sometimes the thing is people spend so much time on social media, Instagram, Facebook, but realistically the business has no substance. It's like, can I see your testimonials? Can I see your results? And people won't do that. But you mentioned that once you help that business grow, that's a true testament of the system and the product you provided. And that's where I think a lot of people need to get to in this industry. This is how much money I make. I call business owners out that we work with. So we actually let go of clients if they're too much in their ego. We're like, where are your loyal customers? Where's your reviews? Where's your results? We won't bring them on in the first place. But if we work with them for 2 or 3 months and they don't have that, and they don't have testimonials and people aren't willing to rebuy, we have basically a 3-strike rule and we'll say, hey, we're going to work with you. We don't just want to pump and dump your business. I find that a lot of the biggest thing I call clients out on is when they go and celebrate their new Lamborghini or their new this, and they literally are just like rubbing it in the face of their clients and their product isn't where it should be. I'm like, you've basically just showed your whole client base that they bought you that, and you haven't delivered on your service. I really don't like, and again, I've got nice cars and things like that, but it's more for me the product. I really just think the product's so integral in a day and age where everyone's focused on the flash and the cash.
Well, it's also building those relationships because, for example, that tool and die shop I talked about, when the IT guy was going through a divorce, who was sitting at the bar with him listening to all the challenges he was going through? Me, who listened to his aspirations of where he wanted to grow in the company. Me, when I would go to other tool and die shops, because that was a space I was in for a while, I would send a thank you letter to everybody, the guys from the shop floor who ran the milling machines and everything else. I would acknowledge them. Hey, you know, Dave, hey, Steve, thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to participate in your thing. Your feedback was greatly appreciated and all that stuff. And what happened was when I'd win the sale, I'd ask, you know, why did you choose us? And the response was overwhelming. Most of the time, we felt that after the sale, you would give us the best support.
Yeah, it's so important. So I've always, when I've treated business and sales, I'm a devout Christian myself, a believer. I've always said to myself, how would I want to be treated? Do unto others as you would want done to yourself. I always try to find an avatar of a family member that I'm speaking with and be like, if I'm talking to a lady or a man, how would my uncle be sold? How would my dad be sold? How would my auntie be sold? I always try to get into that emotion of if that person was my family member and I was watching someone else sell them, honored in what they're doing. And if I could see objectively, is that person doing the right thing? I'd be like, you know, that's the way I've always treated sales. I'm like, would I want this done to a family member with what I'm doing right now? Like, am I selling the right thing? So it's those little one percenters. And I think that doesn't go unnoticed. I like to put reminders of clients that I've worked with. I put notes in CRM inside of Go High Level. I put reminders for their birthday. We can use automations these days. We've had over 60,000 customers, so I'm only one person. But I'll just put a reminder in. We have a birthday reminder text that goes out just to say, hey, happy birthday. Find that out on their onboarding call.
The little things are the big things. That's what people don't realize. Going to the bar, listening to him going through divorce was a little thing. But for him, it was the world because it was somebody that he liked, he trusted, and was not related to family in any way. It was just a friend, and I had become a friend. Actually, the last time I went to that shop, they wouldn't let me in. They were holding the door closed. And I'm going, what's up, dude? And they're like, man, every time you walk in there, you cost us $100,000. You know, the bottom line was their business had exploded. So it was just them making fun of me, which is cool. Yeah, sales is everything. I kind of like to look at it. I don't look at selling people. I get people to buy. That's the outlook I'd look at. If it was your family member, how would you like them to feel? One of the things I've learned over years in sales and building businesses is it's really about your team. Because, you know, Michael Jordan, one of the greatest basketball players in the world, couldn't do it by himself. He needed the team to win all those championships. I think a lot of business owners have a mindset, and you probably run across this, that I'm giving you a job. You should be thankful I'm giving you a job versus you should be thankful that you got the person that's taking a job away from you so you could focus on doing something else. And that's the only way you can grow, right?
Agreed. Again, going back to, you know, referencing the Bible, one thing that we very much live by in our organization is not using the term visionary because that's singular. We reference vision casting. What I like to do is incorporate all of our team having a vision within a vision really grows and accelerates and has had pretty exponential growth, to be honest with you. But it comes from a team having a vision alongside a vision. Because if it's a visionary, it's singular. And sometimes as a boss, you can see that, you know, I'm your employer and this and that. Versus how are you creating independent leaders inside of an organization? So I always say to my team, we've got a lot of team in the Philippines. Being in SaaS and tech, there's some amazing team members from the Philippines. Basically, I'm like, do not call me boss. It's just James. Do not think that it's my way or the highway. I can't see everything. I can get very tunnel vision focused. But if I have you alongside me casting a vision of how you see it, we'll spend more time in workshopping than actually getting done. So we always workshop a lot. I've noticed that all the big tech companies do it. I have a few friends that have worked inside Meta and Google, and they'll workshop for 8 hours and do implementation for an hour. We very much focus on...
You could collapse the whole process.
Exactly. And so we'll bring together our team versus getting fully indoctrinated in a task that might be weeks and months on end. We'll take checks and say, hey, how do you guys see this right now? My team, it might be day one or been with me for 5 years, which some of my team have been. We keep our team for a long time because they love our environment. But I'll say to them, it doesn't matter if it's your first day or your 1,000th day, what do you see that I may not? And they always, especially the day one people, oh, I'm a little bit, you know, nervous, but I say, what do you see that I may not? And they really have just found their voice. One thing I love, and it's really started to be apparent with our vision and mission, having lost mum, our mission is to lead to the eradication of cancer. I want to bring people together and start to wipe out these diseases. My partner lost her father. Me was diagnosed with HIV. So cancer and HIV are two of our big things we want to lead to the eradication of. My team now will say, I'll see one of the guys in the Philippines. It's like 2 a.m. my time. So they're 2 hours behind. It's like midnight. And I'm like, what were you doing last night? And they were like, I was working. I was just getting this project done. I'm like, yeah, but that's not your day. And they said, it's for Amala. And it's really apparent that they've bought into that mission of the business. And they just say for Amala. And I'm like, that's how we know we're on the right track.
What you've got is you've created super fans of your team. That energy and that tonality and that mindset trend, that's why you guys are scaling so successfully, because your team is empowered. When you're talking to prospective customers or existing customers, that energy comes across, right? it's contagious, because if you reach out to someone and get an email and you can tell, you can see how the wording is, or you have a phone conversation and someone says, yeah, hi, can I help you?
Yeah.
You know that they're not having a good day, they're not excited and everything else, and you're going to go, I'm not sure about that business or that place. And again, it goes back to little things or big things. And you've gotten someone put in an extra effort above and beyond. That's someone that loves where they're working. And they're a super fan. And they're telling everybody about what a great company they're working at. And again, you can't buy that kind of PR.
Yeah. My friends in Australia make the joke, like, you're like the king of the Philippines, because whenever anyone needs a virtual assistant, Eileen, she'll hear this because she'll be part of the editing team. I call her my boss. She's been with me for nearly 7 years now. She knows everything about my life, everything about our business. Eileen's always like, can we hire someone new? And then she'll show me her DMs and it would be flooded with, can I come work for your company? Can I come work for your company? Because that's where we've been able to build that culture. Even in the beginning when finances were tight, I remember reading a book, Leaders Eat Last. If you've read that book or heard of that book before, it's a great ethos and philosophy, but also there's legacy, which is about the All Blacks, which you mentioned before we started. Inside of the All Blacks organization, what would happen is that the captain, Richie McCaw, Dan Carter, and Tana Umanga, three of the greatest All Blacks of all time. I used to play rugby in my younger days, so this was the best book for me to read coming into business. The captains would sweep the sheds. So the captains would sweep the sheds. So it wasn't rugby, we get covered in mud and everyone has tape all over them. It's a messy change room. But the captains would actually sweep the sheds. When I started business, it was like, James, you'll sweep the sheds. You need to sweep the sheds. If you're the captain or the leader of this company, you sweep the sheds. And that's really covered through our whole organization. Even in the beginning when finances were tight, I was like, I'm not going to just skin this business for profits. I'm going to sit there and make sure everybody's got incentives, getting bonuses, Christmas time, Christmas parties. Even if it isn't financially where it needs to be, I'll still make sure everyone else eats first. So that's one thing I think a lot of businesses I've seen make the mistake is it's like the employee's dispensable versus they're irreplaceable. When they become a super fan, like you mentioned, they're irreplaceable. I get so upset when someone leaves and I don't ever beg. I always want them to go on their journey and do what they want to do with their life. But I love our team and I think it's such an important thing to really have that asset of super fans in your organization, like you mentioned.
Yeah. One thing about management is that as a manager or as an executive in the company, your job is really to make sure that your team is successful. That's it. You make sure that they're successful. You're the conduit between executive management. If they need something, they tell you, you go to executive management and you help them be successful. If you take care of your team, they'll take care of you. You don't have to worry about yourself. It's automatic.
Agreed.
So let's talk about the third quadrant here, which we talked about finance. Tell me a little bit about how you guys help businesses via finance.
I think I really pulled back the veil on what I've been able to have success with my companies. I've had multiple seven-figure companies and 2 8-figure businesses. I really sat down at the core of it all, and it was the ability to access money for ourselves, our clients. Coincidentally, the number plate on my car is PIF, stands for Paid in Full Sales. You know, I was the CRO of the digital marketing school. So my partner, Scott, was CEO. So, you know, had that identity of a paid in full sale. But when you let go of the ego and you look at the businesses objectively, you realize it wasn't the paid in full sales. It was the ability to access cash flow and make things financially affordable. I remember the first time I did a 100K deal, an online high ticket in online coaching, that's a big deal. It was because we had finance. So we could package up these services and make it affordable without depleting cash. After having 12,000 students and rediscovering God and coming back to faith, I just want to help small businesses have the best opportunity to grow and scale. And I realize that a lot of people would love a business doing 20,000 a month, but they think it's such a big stretch. Do I do SaaS and sign people up for 97 a month? Do I do coaching where it's 2,000 a month? When you pull back the numbers, if you can offer a service between $5,000 to $10,000, and genuinely make it affordable and get your customer a great result, you're only needing to do 2 to 4 sales a month and you have a business doing $250,000 per year. When you contribute that to lead flow and everything else, what we've decided to do, and it hasn't really been done before in the industry, especially in coaching, holding on to the guru and they want to be seen as the expert. Tony Robbins was the first to say, I'm not your guru. I don't want to be your guru, but I wanted to offer an obvious solution. We have finance here in Australia. New Zealand and the US, and we're about to open up the UK. What we're doing is finance for free for all clients to use for their businesses. We get paid through the lender by providing the services as a finance broker. A small subscription, which just covers a couple of bills for the team. We don't pay our staff members for being in SDR, but we ideally are giving away all of our resources. If I can give someone finance, teach them everything we used to charge thousands of dollars for marketing, teach everything in terms of sales. If they can get a lead, convert that lead, place them into finance, we can genuinely help over 10,000 people create a six-figure business. Rather than we're a billion-dollar company, I'd love to be able to say created billions of dollars through our clients. You spoke about super fans, and we speak about it all, obviously the theme of the podcast. We had Mission 10,000 for our school, and it was, you know, 10,000 certified marketers. We did 12,000. This time around, I'm like, I want to help 10,000 small businesses utilize a system of marketing, sales, and finance to grow a successful six-figure business so they can have time freedom for their family. Look back in 2-3 years' time and be like, we did that. Finance for me is the way to not just treat it like finance, but treat it like a system, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does make sense, because that's usually one of the things that kills a lot of companies. They're living invoice to invoice. Yeah. And you get a situation where someone decides to slow pay you. Your cash flow just completely gets screwed up, especially if you didn't have any extra cushion and you were counting on that invoice. You've got teams to pay and suppliers to pay and everything else. It's detrimental.
Yeah, it is. It is. And then because we've attached the software to it through Go High Level, we've actually built out the CRM, the system. So it's everything a business would need. So it's like everything I need to start my business. So it's a full business solution, and finance being the driving key. Because if you can, like you said, slow pay, payment plans can be the killers of business, especially in the online world that a lot of us are operating in these days. Unless you want to be that company that follows them up and sends them to debt collectors and do all that nasty stuff that nobody wants to do, but you have to when you've delivered a service. And
right.
I think for a lot of people, especially I've got a lot of mates in trade, you know, all it takes is one or two invoices not getting paid, the person not returning their calls or literally avoiding them at all costs, and they're laying staff off. So it's like, if you can get finance, which means that you can de-risk your business, but more importantly, you can increase your cash flow and make it more affordable for your customers. So what we've done as well is that once a client becomes an active referral partner, our vision is to lead to the eradication of cancer and HIV and many other sicknesses, illnesses, and disease. Whether we get rid of things in this world, I want to do good in this world. So once someone becomes an active referral partner from our 97 a month subscriptions, that's USD, we actually then are going to donate, once they start referring, $100 from that 97 straight to a charity of choice. The goal is 10,000 active referral partners. So we can give $1 million a month. Collective community input will equal collective community output. Like you're stronger together, you know, and that super fan, this is exactly what we're talking about. I'm so grateful to have been on here today, because what you believe is exactly what I believe. And it's a mission far beyond that ourselves. You know, we want to bring people together.
It's really empowerment. What we're doing is we're empowering people to empower other people. Once you've got those people empowered, phenomenal things happen. Just like you described, you got your guy at midnight in Singapore. I remember I've shared the story several times, but it drives the point home. We were prepping for a presentation, and it was about midnight. The presentation is the following morning. We got to present and demonstrate our software designing the customer's part. You can't just, they want to see how it works for their stuff, not the dog and pony show. It was about midnight, and our manager walks in with a couple of pizzas and some beers. He sits down with us, and we have some pizza and a couple of beers. He basically goes, I know you guys are going to stay late. Don't stay late, but you're going to stay late. Appreciate you guys, and then left. But the fact that he showed up was monumental. We did the presentation the next morning. We all crashed at the office, did the wash in the bathroom, switched into our suits and all that stuff. And at the end of the presentation, it was a Thursday afternoon, we're all done. He goes, all right, guys, looks like it all went well. I'll see you guys Monday. Get out of here.
It's the best. It's the little things.
And I remember it's probably about the 12th time I shared that story, but you know, how many people you see do that anymore?
Yeah, it's so true. And it's those little You know, because they say that the core memories of development are from 0 to 6 years of age, but I don't believe our innocence and childlike nature ever goes away. So when someone treats you with respect, that's the biggest thing in the world. You remember that. I'm exactly the same. I can remember times where I had bad bosses, and when I had great bosses, I strive to be that person that leaves those core memories of team. We've had team leave and just be like, hey, I made a mistake. Can I come back? I'm like, we don't have anything at the moment, but you'll be the first that we let know. We've actually brought team back in. And I know that's where everyone's like, don't do that. But it's like, I don't believe anyone ever leaves on their own accord through malice. I believe they either haven't been heard or they are trying to accelerate their own future. And that's where I always say to my team.
Bingo, like, right there.
I think, who am I to limit someone else's future potential? That's what I always say to myself. Everyone makes it personal. And I'm a big vision thinker and I want visionaries alongside me. So when someone says, I'm going to do this on my own, I'm like, good luck. If you need me to endorse something, if you need support, let me know. I've got the resources. We always strive to do that. It hurts at first, especially when they've been with you for a long time. But when you get out of the ego and out of the look at poor old me and go, hey,
like get yourself out of your own way.
Exactly. Exactly.
James, as we come to the end here, how can people find you?
The easiest way is through Instagram. If people connect with me on social media, it's at James Wellington Official, or our main website is amalafinance.com.au. We're building our new website because we have expanded our finance. I've got Amala Group. My team's currently building that out because I can be quite spontaneous. And having visionaries in your organization, we tend to build a few other things. We've got bookkeeping services, a lot of other things coming, but amala.finance.com.au is probably the easiest way.
Excellent. And then do you have something for our listeners?
So if anyone comes through there and they mention that in the notes, you can get access to the finance company. We do 30-free trial. You don't have to stay on past the trial. We guarantee you will get a funded application within your first month. If you don't, there's no obligation to stay. We only fund deals 5,000 and above. It's 97 a month. So it's like a 6X guarantee. So basically, if you get a deal in your first month, we guarantee we'll help you 5 to 6X your investments. We're here to help people grow and achieve the life they deserve.
James, we've had a great conversation, great insight. It's great for our listeners, and we look forward to having you on the show down the road again.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, superfan, superstar, Freddie D here. Before we wrap, here's your 3A playbook: attract, advocate, and accelerate your business. Power move for today. So here's this episode's top insight. You don't scale a brand by selling harder. You scale by transforming customers into believers who champion your mission alongside of you. So here's your business growth action step. Design one customer experience upgrade this week that makes customers feel like mission-driven insiders, not just transactions. If today's conversation sparked an idea for you, share with the fellow business leader who would benefit and grab the full breakdown in the show notes. Let's accelerate together and start creating business superfans who not only champion your brand, but accelerate your growth.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Business Superfans podcast. If you found today's conversation valuable, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share this episode with someone who could use these powerful insights to level up their business. Remember, creating business superfans isn't just about your customers. It's about fostering genuine, impactful connections across your entire business ecosystem. When you invest in those relationships, success doesn't just happen, it accelerates. Until next time, I'm your host, Freddie D. Let's keep building superfans, creating unstoppable momentum, and driving your business toward extraordinary success. See you in the next episode.
We hope you took away some useful knowledge from today's episode of the Business Superfans podcast. The path to success relies on taking action. So go over to businesssuperfans.com and get your hands on the book if you haven't already. Join the Accelerator community and take that first step in generating a team of passionate supporters for your business. Join us on the next episode as we continue guiding you on your journey to achieve flourishing success in business.